Hello, everyone. Welcome to a bonus episode of The One Inch Barrier. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ojano. I hope you're all staying safe and staying healthy and staying at home. And if you think my energy is kind of low, it's because I only have 2.5 hours of sleep. All right. So this episode is part of a 2018 retrospective where we talk about the films that were nominated alongside Roma, which won in 2018 for Best Foreign Language Film. That's the last year it was called that before it transitioned to International Feature Film. So for this episode, we are going to talk about Poland's official submission that year at the 91st Academy Awards. We are going to talk about Cold War, or in its original language, Zimna Wojna, co-written and directed by Paweł Pawlikowski. So this film, for a quick summary, this is about a music director named Victor who scouts talents and records music in provinces. And then he gets to encounter this performer named Zula, who is good at singing and also dancing, but has a dark past. And then kind of like slowly they started to have this passionate, I don't know if slowly is the right word. They had a passionate affair, which because of the political tensions in their country, that really affected their relationship and how it unfolded. Because ultimately he tried to persuade her to join him to flee communist Poland to go to France. That's a quick summary of Cold War. So our guest for this episode is from Mexico. She was already on this podcast for a bonus episode on Corpus Christi. She is a creator and editor-in-chief of Palomita de Maíz and contributor at In Session Film. She back. Please welcome Alessandra Rangel. I'm so happy to have you back.
Hello. I'm very happy to be back too. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. Can you tell our listeners where can they find you on the internet?
Okay. You can find me at Palomita de Maíz, and you can find also some of my articles at In Session Film or Filmatomy and Cherry Picks. And on Twitter, you can find me at Alessandra underscore KR.
All right, there you go. So, like with Corpus Christi, you know, because we've been following each other on Twitter, like when the occasion of Cold War came up, I'm like, I think I should. I felt it. I felt like a social obligation at this point. So, first of all, I'm going to say something that's not related to Cold War. Okay. I don't know if you've seen it, but because of your constant tweets with Steven Yeun, I have sleeping problems recently, especially last week when I have like 12 hours of sleep. I'm having continuing dreams of Steven Yeun.
Really? Because of me?
He was really sweet, and he's, you know.
I think that when I really like something or someone, I can't stop tweeting about it. So now I guess that everyone that follows me on Twitter knows that I adore Cold War or Steven Yeun or, yeah, you know, I don't know, even Corpus Christi. So I guess that it was useful that I couldn't stop tweeting about it because now I'm here.
Yeah, the effects of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I know that you... I don't think you would be tweeting a lot about Cold War if you didn't love it. So maybe I would change my question. So instead of asking, like, what did you think of Cold War? I'm going to ask, what is it with Cold War that made you fall in love with it?
Gosh. Well, first of all, I think that it is absolutely beautiful. I mean, like, technically speaking and visually speaking, all about it is so nostalgic and, like, very well done. And then you see the story and you see that at the center of it is a love story and a very passionate one where these two leads can't get over each other. And no matter what happens in their lives, they go back to each other over and over again. And then when you learn a little about the inspiration for the story and you learn that Paweł Pawlikowski inspired on his parents to develop the story, it becomes like more and more intense. It's just like a tragic intense and passionate love story. How can you not like that? It's just very, very captivating, I guess.
And I have a follow-up on that because I know you rewatched it. Are there any new observations that you got from this rewatch, or did your feelings kind of change for the better, or did the love lessen a little bit? What happened in the rewatch?
The thing is that I think that I've seen it too many times now. So thankfully, I haven't changed my mind and I haven't stopped loving it. I think that I like it maybe even more. But now I guess that I just reinforce the idea that they were very toxic for each other and that maybe it's a little dangerous or worrying to over-romanticize this story. Because yes, it is beautiful, but at the same time, it's very, very toxic, where even some physical violence happens. So it's just just like a tragedy, I guess. So I guess that my feelings with it stayed the same, though. So yeah, I still like it. But yeah, it can be very intense. Your ideas change, right? No?
Yes. I can still hear in my mind. All right, so I have to stop and gather my thoughts. So when the first time I watched this was, I think, in the context of the year, the Oscar year, I think. I'm not sure. I should have been sure. The problem is when everything's getting caught up in award season, there's already this expectation. Like, okay, yeah. Oh, this has to be good. Or like, mm-hmm. There's a certain way that you're expecting to feel something about. And then when it doesn't match you, you already interpret it as, I'm not really on board with the hype. Which is, okay. I think, a factor in film criticism and appreciation that is innate with award season, is that whether you align or not with the hype, and that's where your opinion gets based, not really on like whether you like it or not, is that whether you like it enough to join the bandwagon or not. Yeah. At the time, in my first watch, I thought, well, for the lack of a better word, that left me cold. I was detached. Okay. I cannot imagine why people would love this. I mean, I highly admire it. I think the same thing probably I felt with Ida, but also less. It's like, I think this is the kind of film that you really admire, but I don't think I want to get the love. And okay. Then I rewatched it for this podcast.
Okay.
5 a.m. in the morning, all nice. Dark, quiet, kind of cold, very spiritual. And I think I love it.
No, that's good.
In this second time, with all that removed, I just, all of the surrounding noise, you know, removed, mm-hmm. I just focus on the film, and I just realized how meticulously done it is. How it's so decided in all of its choices, and it's not to take away the organic feeling of it. I just think it's such a well-directed film that this take on a romance that is passionate and, like you said, toxic, which is something I just noticed now, is toxic. But also, there is this restraint that it practices, which adds the beauty of it and actually makes the storytelling even more layered. Okay. Because I think this is a kind of romance that refuses easy sentimentality. Yes. It forces us to observe people falling in love, people being toxic in love, people falling out of it, and all that. And what happens is that you really get to examine closely, because the film is not easily giving you moments. So you look closer, you pay attention more, you observe characters, you see how detailed they are in the frame, for example. And I just realized in like 88 minutes, this is such a complete film.
Yeah.
And there is this feeling of, I don't think I'm getting everything. I think there are deliberate blanks or like spaces, yes, scenes between scenes, which makes me kind of want to get more. I love it when a film does that.
Yeah, I think that one of my criticisms when I first saw it was exactly that, that it was very, we only got to see like certain aspects of their love life. And there were like these big fragments in the story that we didn't see. It was like very, very specified, specific on what he wanted us to see. And maybe we, well, I had the expectation of seeing more of them or maybe seeing their lives apart. And now, as you mentioned it, when you realize and when you start watching it again, is that you have to take everything you can from what the director wants you to see. So maybe, and also it's like maybe this romantic idea that their lives from apart from each other is are not as important as when they're together, or it doesn't really matter. So what is important for the story is when they are together. But yeah, I do think that for 88 minutes, we see a lot of like intensity and sentimentality, and not exactly a lot of story. So you have to find some clues in what you see on screen.
And it, I think it makes you even more alert with your emotions. Yeah. Because this is a film. I love there's this one line when it says, time doesn't matter when you're in love. Which I don't know if what would make sense of that. But I think in terms of the structure of the film, because it casually jumps from year to year. And also with scenes, there are scenes that are just cut right after something happened or going longer than we expect. And the way the film uses time to make us feel not just the romance, but the world they're in. Because that is a huge force in their romance.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't know, as an editor, as in the editing of this film, just now I notice it aids a lot in the rhythm, which I think every editing does with a rhythm, but on how it makes us go with this ride, with this romance, and its ups and downs, and it makes us excited to see what's next. Because there, because of that decided way of structuring scenes, the editing, the story, it's like we don't know what's going to happen next. Yeah. And it gives us so much involvement.
Yeah, and also, for example, for me, it was very important. The music was very important. Because, yes, the editing is important and the different settings, you can see where they are in their lives and how they changed. But music is also an important factor to know how they changed as well and how they started. And even how the time has passed by and how they start in Poland in with folk music. And then they change. And when he moves to Paris, you have this jazz, which also means the change of time. And then you go to these ballads and you can also see how they are feeling through their expression of music. So I love the way Pawlikowski plays with music. And this is something that we can see in all of his films, really. But I think that this movie in particular is like the perfect example of how to use music to accompany the story, to say those things that you can't say because you don't include them. So you use all of the elements that you have to explain that, and music is a huge factor.
Exactly. And you know, with this film that's not giving away everything through dialogue, which I think is a great example of great writing with less dialogue, because it's just well thought of and decided and organic as a choice, because these characters really kind of live between the lines. The fact that this film starts right in the middle of a music performance informs us already of how music will play, and it's center focus. I think the performers are like breaking the fourth wall looking at us. That it gives us already this, like, this is going to be about music in all of its forms and how it will mutate in their lives. And you see musician and singer and how they complement and clash, and how really music as a concept, because music as well is time bound, there's a temporal element to music, there's rhythm to it. I don't know, I think there is a unity in terms of concept and then how it is done through filmmaking. Because when you do something like the isolation that these people feel during this tumultuous political climate, and then the element of music and being, I don't know, with the character of Zula being hard to read because she also has a secret. And when you see all of those concepts and you see them through the filmmaking, I think that is demonstrative of how the direction of Pavel Pawlikowski is so, I don't know, so well formed, that that's why I can say that this film feels complete, because everything works together from the conceptual level up to the filmmaking level. And there's this thing that you said about music. I was in love with, like I said, the oyoyoy, the folk song. It gets repeated multiple times. That's why I know, like, okay, this is going to be a motif. This is going to be important in the journey, especially of Zula. That's why when she performed it at the bar as, like, a jazzy version, and then when she recorded it in a French version?
Yeah, French.
You see her character through that song. And it's just, like, these small details of, like, this song she's singing and how she's singing it and how her singing is captured makes meaning. It gets compounded to this whole journey that she has just using this one song. And then there's more, of course. I don't know. I'm glad I did a rewatch. I'm not wrapping up. I'm sorry. I'm just like, that section, the music part, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it's really intense. And then maybe you can think that maybe music is, well, not maybe, music is an important element of both our lives. And at the end, you see that music is precisely the way they have to sacrifice each other for each other. So, for example, Victor goes back to Poland, and what happens to him is that he can no longer play because of what they do to him, right? So the most important element of his life is gone, and he sacrificed that to go back to her. And then she goes back into this spin of being, I guess, like a famous singer, like very drunk to just survive. And she does that so she can help him survive and to get out of that camp where he is at the end of the story. So it's just like this cycle of doing something that you like, and that's how they meet. But then that is also the way that's also the medium you use to help each other and maybe, yeah, go back to each other, I guess.
Yeah, how it does handle this concept and traverses so many aspects of their lives. And, you know, I think it's kind of true as well, just to the characters, you know, as they are musicians who I'm sure, like, not just music, but I think the act of performing, because Zula is also dancing. And I think the concept of performance in this world where they have to go along also to support the communist regime, and how they are performing to that as a means of survival. And then when is it time to stop performing to that and resist and leave? I'm really glad I'm in a better place now, because I feel like I'm going to be crying right now. But no, I'm good. There is this aspect of the performance that also struck me as how, I don't know, these characters are also performing to one another. Because I think also with Victor, I think he's having a hard time as well reading Zula as a person. Mm-hmm. And Zula hiding something from her past. And there was a point when she was ratting him, basically, you know, with giving information to, I forgot that person, giving information about him. You see that even in the times where they're not supposed to be performing, they are still in some way performing, especially Zula, which makes her such an enigmatic, fascinating presence. And Yuana Kulig does all of that and transforms these big concepts into a person, a human person, which would have all of those qualities and even more that I cannot read. It's intensely fascinating to see.
Yeah. And also what you were saying about the political discourse they have to include in their songs, that is also like the end of something that they were doing, especially him. He was doing this maybe because of love to the arts and maybe because he really wanted to do like something like pure and folk music. And once they get this idea that they have to include political discourse, is the time that everything starts unraveling for both of them, because Zula doesn't care because she's definitely in a better position than she was before. But Victor, he does care. And that's why he wants to move away, because maybe this is too much for them, for him. And now this is where their first separation, and maybe the most important one, happens. Because one is willing to do that because she is okay with that, but the other has more intense ideals, so he isn't willing to sacrifice that.
Yeah, that aspect of how him as an artist, he loses that love for the thing that he loves to do because of an interference, a political interference, a political ideology that is being forced upon the people. And to see how those ramifications on a character, on a human level, the film does that so well. And I think it also, that the tensions, the political tensions depicted in the film are also specifically affecting them because of what they are already. Yeah. Why is Zula okay with all of this? Why is Victor not? Why do they react differently when...
I think you have to take into consideration their backgrounds and where they're coming from. So Zula, as we learned, she was in Yale and she had an abusive father and she didn't really have anything. So when she arrives in this folk group, she becomes the first singer, like the most important singer. So she has everything through this group. And we don't know much about Victor's background story, but I guess that he has a more comfortable life and he doesn't have the needs or the scarcity that she used to have. So I guess that he can have the luxury of seeing everything from a different perspective and of deciding, okay, I can leave this because I really don't need it and because my ideals may be more important, you know, or because I disagree with this, or I want even better things than what I have right now. And Zula, she got everything through that group. She was in the best position of her life. Why would she want to give it away to the uncertainty of going to the West?
Yep, exactly. So that's how good writing really is, on how the events surrounding them is, how do characters with innate characterization, how do they react to that, and how the organic next step for these characters unfold. It's almost as if, you know, you're watching something that this is, of course, it's gonna go this direction, and it's not like in a bad way, but just because it's very clear that the film knows these characters. So when they go to this direction of the story, we're like, oh, she stays and leaves him and he goes to Paris and then they meet again. It's almost as if, of course, And that's not because it's predictable, but because the film knows its characters and how they were specifically written to respond to that, and how these two, the characters and their environment react to one another, and how they respond is so organic, and which is, I think, a mark of a great writing when the surrounding circumstances don't feel forced and their reactions make sense in the sense of the character. And it also made me think, because I think I just judged Zula. I was like, maybe she has this tendency to self-destruct.
Yeah, definitely.
But also, hearing what you say, it's almost like a double-edged sword, but when she's self-destructing and not going with him and really wasting away the chance to run away, she's also kind of in a survivalist mode, because she knows she already has people are on her. And these are two almost like, they're both in survivalist mode, but they're responding differently. And they are on fire together, but it just can't work, which makes this even more, you know, when something is really just a struggle, like, oh, I hope you can be together, but it's really not pointing in that direction, it makes it more heartbreaking, because you want to imagine a world for them where everything's just fine and they can be together. And that's the beauty of the film, is that it understands that there is something painful in this. You can correct me on this. You can say your opinion. I don't think the film necessarily paints them as tragic, but it understands that they have ugliness to deal with. But at the end, I don't know. I'm not formed. My thoughts are not formed.
Do you want to chime into that? There's a tragedy to the fact that you love someone so much, but you can't be together. And that's maybe because of, for example, here you have different ideologies, you have the barrier of physical frontiers, geographical frontiers, but also because you can't just be with that person because of your personality. Or maybe, I guess that's very common and understandable, to love someone so much, but to realize that you're not meant to be together because of who you are and because of who they are. So I guess that the way I see it at the end is that they rather do that than dealing with the fact that if they continue living, they wouldn't be together. And not because of the circumstances, but because of them. Because we see them for a while, they are together in Paris. And there is nothing really that can go between them, but they can't make it work because that's just who they are. She's very explosive. She's kind of insecure. He's very stern, very stoic. And I don't think that their personalities really like go with one another. They love each other, and that I don't have a doubt that they do. But that's the only thing that unite them, really. So I think there's a tragedy to that, to know that you love someone so much, but you just can't make it work.
Hey, what's up? Thank you for listening to this preview of this bonus episode. If you want to hear more, please head to patreon.com/theoneinchbarrier. For only $4 a month, not only do you have full access to bonus episodes, but you also get early access to regular episodes. Again, thank you so much. And together, let's break the 1-inch barrier.
Dwa serduszka, cztery oczy.